All right, sweet. So, welcome everybody to another episode of the Sidecar Coffee Podcast. My name is Lewis.
I'm Caleb.
And today we have
And Pepe.
something. Yeah,
Yeah, there he is.
exactly. There he is. So yeah, starting off this episode, we have something so special. And
Absolutely incredible. Like I like words can actually not describe how we feel and how amazing this is.
But yeah, welcome to the podcast, Pepe.
Yes. So to go over who Pepe is, he's the owner of Finca Soledad in Ecuador, ambassador of Sidra and Típica Mejorado varieties, and the creator of the tea oxidation process, which is a new process on the market. I think Onyx has some pre-orders available right now. He is also the winner of the 2024 Spreggy Most Notable Producer Award. So congratulations on that. He's
Thank
worked
you,
with
guys.
big roasters like Manhattan, Say, Onyx, September, Hatchcrafted, and many more. His coffees have been shared and showcased on the world stage at competitions with the World Barista Championships. He's also a family man, inspiration to all, titan of the industry. He's the man, the myth, the legend, the greatest of all time, the GOAT, Pepe
The
Cuijón,
goat.
everybody.
No. No
Round of
way.
applause. Round of applause
That's
around the world.
crazy, guys. I'm just humbled to be able to share what nature lays in front of me and try to make a really nice coffee for people to share on a daily basis, man. That's all I want to inspire. That's it.
That's
Well,
awesome.
yeah. Well, speaking of sharing coffee, today we're drinking one of Pepe's coffees. It is the Sidra Wave Natural from Apollo's Gold.
Wow.
And we did a shot of espresso. And we also have a
Wait. What is a sidecar?
What is a
What is a
sidecar?
sidecar?
What's
Oh
a
my gosh.
sidecar, Caleb?
So a sidecar is a espresso, or a milk. Wow. Hold on. Espresso-based milk beverage. We have a 6 ounce latte, I guess, right now. And then right next to it, we have that same espresso used in the milk beverage to really compare and contrast the effects of milk in espresso. So that's what it
I'd like to
is.
hear the notes you get from the coffees because I'm not a big espresso or milk beverage fan. I'm a pour over dude, but I would love to hear what's your
Okay.
take on the Sidra Wave on
Gotcha.
espresso and milk. First off,
What do you get?
it's a strawberry bomb to the face. It is so
Ooh.
sweet, very fruity, very. It's like a sparkling type acidity going
Yeah.
on.
Wow. Super light. Strawberry, lychee,
Lychee.
big lychee.
You know, that's very funny because I'm drinking the same coffee right now, but on a pour over, and I do get the same notes. You know, it's a red Yeah.
coffee,
Oh,
has an
yeah.
effervescent acidity body. So it's very, very funny. That's I'm very excited.
Yeah.
This one was roasted by Dakota at Onyx,
Okay.
pretty much the
Yeah.
same
Man,
coffee.
what a
So
guy.
it's really
Great guy.
funny. Really funny. Cool.
Dude, the aftertaste is very citrusy. It's almost
Gosh.
like orangey, except almost creamy. I don't know. Very sweet. Good.
Super
All right.
excited, guys. I'm Try the milk
so
beverage now.
happy to hear that.
So right off the bat with this milk beverage, I'm getting strawberry shortcake. Like just right off.
Wow.
It's like strawberry yogurt, strawberry shortcake, very strawberry, very red coffee.
Almost like
Beautiful.
again, like
Yoshi
a
Tatsu is a great roaster. Yeah.
There's like a cantaloupe finish almost,
Yeah.
like sweet.
Oh, wow. Cool. Nice.
Yeah, very melony. Yeah.
Yeah, just all around. It's super
It's
nice. It's
very hard
super
to
well
make
done.
natural coffees because you get the tendency of them getting a little bit dirty or woody, you know, like earthy. So it's just like a labor of love, you know. Making washed coffees is very hard, but making natural is so much more difficult, especially in an artisan scale. So I'm just delighted to hear that you get clean notes from the coffee. Oh
That's
yeah,
most the most
absolutely.
important part of a coffee. I think it's elegance, not intensity. It's incredible. And if you don't mind, we would love to hear you talk about this coffee specifically, the Sidra Wave, and the process of going through that, growing it.
Perfect, yeah. So Sidra, as you know, is a variety that has become kind of famous. It's like a flagship of Ecuadorian coffee. The origin of Sidra is a bit not clear, you know, how we got to name it like that, because some people say it's a cross between a Bourbon and this and that, but which is not true. The reality of the world's research studies have laid out that Sidra is just like an Ethiopian landrace. So it came as a seed from Ethiopia on the Nestle project. And they were trying to come up with hybrids or coffees that were resistant, but with a good cup. And a guy that was working there called Olger, he got some of the seeds and planted them in his farm. And 4 years later, he had some amazing, beautiful heirlooms growing in his farm, and he started spreading that in Ecuador. So he did that with Sidra and Típica. And for that, I'm super thankful to him because he put Ecuador on the map. You know, before that, we were trying to copy Colombia or trying to copy Brazil, trying to get the same seeds, which was a big mistake because Ecuador, like Panama, is a very tiny little country. Yeah. So going back to the process itself, Sidra wave is a natural that we harvest specific times related to the moon and also the brick content, which is the sugar content in the mucilage. When we have that done, we make no use of water. We try to be a water-free farm so we don't pollute rivers. So we don't do buoyancy. We just do wild yeast fermentation. So we clean by hand the coffee. Then we put it on sealed tanks and ferment for 48 to 72 hours. Let the mucilage do the work. Let the yeast and the bacteria do their work. After that, we take it down to a very, very long and continuous drying in a dark room place. You know, the sun dries stuff really well, but it also volatilizes compounds that disappear because the sun is very strong, the rays, the UVs. So by doing a darkroom drying, you're able to control the variables of not doing it too hard on the seed, which is a living organism, an embryo, but also to keep a steady line going down of the moisture level will always be going down, never up. Because if you dry naturally, let's say, you will have a very, very hot day, but very cold night. And that creates a stress on the embryo. So when we do the darkroom drying, we kind of get a very continuous decreasing humidity in the coffee. So I think that also adds to the flavor.
Yeah, less variables and less degradation of different compounds and things like that. But
that's awesome.
So Pepe, I wanted to just you talk about yourself a little bit. I know you were a mountaineer, and a question I kind of have is like, where'd you get the love for the outdoors from? I know I did a little research and listened to a couple podcasts that you've been on, and you talk about your dad being in politics, and you talk about your sister having a love for the ocean, and just kind of what sparked that love for nature and exploration.
You've done some research, and you're totally right on what you just said. And the thing is that my father, being a diplomat, he pretty much took us around the world and created an environment that was always changing. You know, we never had relatives, uncles, like cousins or people to play around with or went to the same school all of our lives. We changed school every 2 years. So we could never relate to family. We could never relate to friends because they were always changing. So the only variable that never changed is nature. Mm-hmm. We had mountains, we had the moon, we had the ocean, and it was always there. So I think that's the reason why my sister and I got this attachment to the elements of nature. In my sister's case, it was the ocean because she was a oceanographist and diver instructor for so many years, like 25 years. Now she lives in the Galapagos. Yeah. And the other side, I just looked up and went straight to the mountains. And my father always makes the joke, you know, why my daughter goes down and my son goes up? Why can't she just stay normal? And that's impossible. So I think that's how we got that relationship to nature. It was just through being exposed to too much change, I think. Yeah.
Wow. That's awesome.
And then also talking about kind of, your past a little bit with you never really liked coffee. You mentioned before, I wanted to ask, cause I didn't hear it. What did you have, like an aha moment? Like, did you have one coffee that you tried that was like, oh my, like, this is what coffee can be. Was it, and just kind of like curious on that moment, that switch for you?
I think I had a few aha moments. Some were good, some were bad. You know, when I came here to Intag, I just wanted to get away from my previous life, which was mountain climbing, and get into a more, you know, like forgotten in the land. Because while I was climbing, I became the first Latin American to solo summit the Seven Summits. So that created, you know, a bit of a fuss and a lot of publicity, and people were interviewing me, and that's good and bad, you know, because you lose your, sometimes your track, your north, when you're too many people want to know about you. So I just bought this farm and I wanted to plant some trees, you know, and forget about everything.
Lay low.
So the area that, lay low, exactly. I didn't have a WhatsApp or an Instagram or Facebook at all. So I got here working for the Red Cross. People ask me why Intac, and I cannot have the answer. I think sometimes land chooses you. That there's a place you get to, and the conditions are okay, and it just happens that you become the owner, which in a way is just like a responsibility, not an ownership, because we're going to pass through this land, you know, in 50 years or so,
right.
And nobody will remember. So it's like a responsibility. So I ended up here just by chance. So I was starting to plant my trees because I wanted to reforest everything. And people were saying, why don't you plant coffee? And I'm like, no, man, I'm not into coffee. I don't like that too much. You know, maybe tea, but not coffee. No, but this is coffee country. And if you're planting trees, you're going to be very happy with it. And I'm like, no, I don't know. And coffee sucks. You know, I've seen my dad drink Nescafe all his life. He's my dog. Hey, Ouya.
Oh, hi.
Ouya. Can you see it here? Ouya. Ouya. She's my companion now.
Hello, Ouya.
Yeah.
Oh, my
gosh. So, yeah.
Adorable.
Yeah, man. So, yeah, I didn't like coffee, man. Coffee was this sour, burnt thing that people would mix with sugar and milk and completely obliterate flavor into this whatever dry stuff, you know. And I like jasmine tea, and I like herbal teas, red teas, white teas. So I've always been a tea person. The ritual of making tea is so amazing. But then, you know, people said, let's try, you know, okay, let's try a few plants. So I started planting coffee, and it was very hard, you know, from the beginning. You have a seed that takes 2 years to become a plant, and then it takes 2 more years for it to lay some coffee. So it's like almost like having a child, you know. So in that process, I little by little became more in love or in tune with the coffee, because you become more in tune with nature. You know, you understand the cycles, you understand the shade, you understand the nutrition, you understand so many other aspects of nature that are, for people that are urban, we don't understand nothing about nature. You know, for us, nature is just like a concept. But agriculture people that really work off the land and live off the land, they know much better that silent language. So it was first that the thing, you know, like romanticism that got me into coffee. Then production came in and a lot of problems, you know, prices and costs and stuff like that. So it was not so nice. Then I started roasting coffee because I thought roasting coffee would take me away from the harsh times, not getting properly paid. And then I started falling in love a little more with the bean, because you start understanding that transformation from seed to bean, roasted bean, and the effect on the mind, the effect on the soul was pivotal. But then I remember having some more troubles and liking it, not liking coffee, when I got to the point that I tried a Colombian geisha. I remember I tried this coffee, and when I had that cup, I'm like, what the fuck is this? You know, floral sweetness. And I'm like, what is this, man? I've never had these in my life. And that got me back into the roller coaster. You know, I have to do this. I have to be able to present something as beautiful as a geisha.
Mm-hmm.
So I must admit, you know, geisha got me in love with coffee to the end, you know, to the bottom of my soul.
Right.
I have chances to go to Panama, to the beautiful people of Panama, the most amazing producers in the world. And I've learned so much from them. And now I'm just trying to be better every day, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah, they are doing some special things in Boquete.
Yeah, they are, and I think us too. One of our big moments with coffee was a Colombian geisha from Pablo Guerrero, and we talked about that on one of our previous episodes. And I just remember like that immediate reaction of like, what is this? Like, it's so unknown, and like had no idea that it would open up a road to like just trying to, I guess, like recreate that experience for others is kind of like the big thing that drives me. And it's so
that's very nice. Yeah.
So hearing you say that just reminded me of that. And just we had that moment together. We talked about it on a previous episode, and that was just something that reminded me of. But then you're also talking, while talking about this, you're talking about producing it and then getting it to the roaster. And I guess like we want to know like what, so when you've worked on something for so long, and you've put so much of your time and your effort into growing such a beautiful crop, how, I guess, like, what's the, how do you describe a really good roaster to farmer relationship? And then at what point do you just have to trust that this roaster is going to take something that you've worked on for so long and make something beautiful out of it?
I think that's a very, very good question, you know. And I think the vibration, the energy, the synergy that you get with a person ends up being what's most important about a relationship. It's not about how much money or how long it's going to take for you to pay me or this and that. Those are things that are substantial, but not the real essence of the matter. I think the relationship of having been able to talk with the guy that's roasting the coffee and interact, you know, cup together at distance and know where the coffee's going. I am in a way so much in love with the beans that I make that I want to really know where they're going, who's trying it, and stuff like that. It's not because I'm possessive, but it's because I think I really I get fed by the energy of other people to keep doing my work. So when I have roasters or companies that interact a lot with me, you know, and ask a lot of questions and post a lot on social media, that makes me very, very happy. And on the contrary, I have sometimes people that just buy my coffee and I never hear from them again. And I don't know where that coffee went, who had it. Those things made me a bit sad. Yeah. So I like to interact. You know, I'm a social guy.
Yeah, making sure they represent your coffee well. I
just know for me personally, we were actually talking about this earlier about how like I can't imagine like working on something and then just having to trust that someone's going to take that and represent it well and put it up to the standards in which you know it can be at. And so that's just something I've always really wondered about.
Yeah, roasters can only ruin coffee.
Yeah, they can. They can always do it, right?
I think coffee, some people relate the industry as a chain. And the chain breaks on the weakest link, you know. So the weakest link can be transportation, roasting, brewing, or the end consumer. So we try to make this chain as strong as possible. And through direct relationships, because I like to do direct trade with my coffee, and I've been blessed by achieving pretty much doing a good job on that. Yeah. It's so beautiful, you know, because you know exactly where the coffee is going, and you have this beautiful synergy with the roaster. And the company that has a coffee, like we were talking about, say a few minutes ago, and I had the chance to go over there, and my son went to work with them and got the chance to cup like 70 cups a day, you know, and learn so much about cupping and origins, and that company is such a beautiful thing, you know. It's so small in the world. You would think that say is like a huge place in Brooklyn, but it's so small, man. And in that small little place, the heart of these people is so big that it was so humbling that we managed to do a pop-up there. And my son was packing the coffee that we produced at the farm. So this synergy was something that we'll never forget and I'll always be thankful for.
No, yeah. And I was going to ask about that experience and ask about Jose. And that's awesome that you mentioned that. I know I can't remember where I heard it from or if you posted on social media about it, but that's awesome to hear and get to experience that. I was going to ask, leading off of what kind of we've been talking about, your kind of view. I know hearing about you talking about like creating awareness for sensory and having responsible consumptions, talking about wanting roasters to offer smaller bag sizes, 50 grams, 20 grams. Do you kind of want to talk about like how you kind of want the industry, your kind of view on the industry and in that aspect of introducing people into beautiful coffee and what coffee can be without in that aspect, I guess?
Yeah. I've always said that coffee is not a drug. You know, most people think that coffee is a drug, a wake up call, you know, caffeine to go to work, otherwise I can't do it. That's the way the industry wants to put it, you know. But I think we should go back to the ancient times when coffee was taken as a medicine. And as a medicine, it's like a ritual, a morning daily ritual or an afternoon or after lunch ritual, where you have this little moment, which is maybe 10 minutes in your life, where you can just stop thinking about work, stop thinking about problems, and just get into this vessel and travel to Burundi, travel to Guatemala, travel to Ethiopia, travel to Ecuador by brewing a cup of coffee and letting it sit in your mind and make you more aware and make you more beautiful and make you more grateful about being alive. Mm-hmm. That's what I call the sensory revolution, tabula rasa, or however you want to call it. I think we need to go back to those days, man, where coffee is treated as a medicine.
Mm, being intentional.
And I make this funny analogy, you know, because people talk pounds, people talk about kilos, but that's a lot of fucking coffee, man. A kilo of coffee lays like 80 espressos, 80, that's 80, that's a lot, man. That's what would you drink in a month. So why expect coffee to come in such big sizes? Because in that there's a cost. I'm gonna fucking 1,000 kilo of coffee, but you maybe $50 or $60 for 125 grams or like super Panama Geisha or something like that, where you can lay out maybe 20 cups of coffee, that's not too bad. You know, you end up paying like $4, $5, $3 for a very decent cup. That's not bad at all. But when you have those big sizes, it makes it not affordable for the regular people. And on the if you want to add on that, you know, once you open a bag of coffee, yeah, the quality goes down very fast. You start oxidizing, so you need to freeze it, and that doesn't make much sense. You don't have space in your freezer. You want it to be like other flavors to go in. So you want to consume the coffee and get over and start something else. So if you have a 50-gram bag or a 100-gram bag, you can do that. You know, you can have several cups of coffee and then move on to another one. Mm-hmm. Which I think should be like a standard in the industry, so more people can drink coffee. Because what we want is more people to awake to the sensory revolution. We don't want just geeks or rich people to drink high specialty coffee in Dubai or whatever. We want everybody to drink specialty coffee because it's even also good for your health. Mm-hmm. But you need to lower the dose. That's what I think needs to be done.
I think there's a lot of people not knowing what coffee can be and misconceptions, I think, and doing that to where you can have those smaller bags and being able to share. Like, I know whenever I get like have the opportunity to buy like a kind of more rare coffee or something, I always try to share it. I always try to like invite my friends who I know or my roommates, like, try this coffee. This coffee is insane. And it's really awesome to see like that them like, this is coffee. Is there flavors in here? Is this tea? Like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, It's beautiful.
That's beautiful, man.
Yeah, so it's awesome to be being able to share that and stuff.
I completely agree what you said. Sharing is another part of the coffee responsibility, man. Because if we just drink it ourselves, you know, that's just going to stay contained. But if you're able to invite friends, and instead of you know, drinking beer and watching the game, you can drink coffee, then watch the game, and you'll be more aware and even more happy.
Right.
And it's completely legal, man. If you want to talk about it too, man, because, you know, you have these other drugs that people have on a daily basis. And, you know, I used to smoke weed. I smoked weed all my early years. But then I just quit because I thought coffee was so much better, man. Mm-hmm. So much better. I wake up with coffee and I love, and I could drink 20 cups of coffee a day. And I've never had anything wrong going with that. Other than weed, you know, I had problems with my lungs and stuff like that. So I just had to quit, and I'm pretty happy with it. I'm sorry for talking about this.
No worries. Just came in my mind. No worries at all.
No, there's we can talk about anything here.
Yeah, I think I have a similar experience with coffee. Like, I sit in bed at night and just can't wait to wake up in the morning so I can drink coffee. Something I look forward to every single day.
Or especially when you order something so special and it's being delivered, like, it's like it feels like Christmas, like Christmas Eve every time when you're like, oh, that coffee's coming tomorrow. Like, that coffee from say. Is coming tomorrow, and it just feels like something you get to wake up to. And just again, going back to sharing, we have so many different friends that are always asking, like, when can we taste coffee with you guys? Like, you have to make me something. And so we're like Lewis said, we're always constantly trying to share whatever we have.
You know, one thing I'd like to talk about, and before I forget, and it's like, what do I want to see in the industry in the near future? I'd like to have more micro roasters, like neighborhood roasters, roasting coffee in Missouri, roasting coffee in any little place and town and parish in the United States and the world. So we don't have to, you know, pay for an expensive FedEx fee to get a coffee from that went from Ecuador to, I don't know, whatever, Singapore, and then back to the States. That makes sense for a few times, but long term, it's not the way. You know, the way would be to have a lot more micro roasters learning their deed, you know, and doing a beautiful job and roasting the coffee in the neighborhood so people can just walk off their house and fucking buy a beautiful bag of coffee. Mm-hmm, so that should be the future, you know, more micro roasters, more neighborhood roasters, sharing the vibe, man.
Yeah, making it more sustainable, making the supply chain smaller. Yeah, absolutely. So. I wanted to ask you about kind of the coffee culture in Ecuador. I know you talk about, I wanted to ask about, is it Instinto coffee?
Instinto.
Ask about that. Instinto, yeah. And ask about that and how that's been going. And I know that you are an advocate for kind of education and getting producers and farmers able to brew coffee for themselves and being able to have that good tasting experience and kind of the resources to brew good coffee and working with Comandante and stuff. So I just wanted to ask you about that.
Yeah, well, I started in Instinto. Instinto means instinct in Ecuador. When I was a mountain climber, I survived just by instinct. You know, I wasn't much about planning, but just trusting my guts and in the climbing. And that came into the coffee too. So that's why I named the coffee Instinto. So I started roasting around 2018, just because I just could not sell my coffee green to a decent price. So I started roasting it, and I really loved it because my knowledge for coffee just became so much better. Like, my understanding of processing and drying and all that could only achieve it through roasting. But roasters, normally live in other countries, not producing countries, and roasting equipment, machines, technical stuff, lab stuff is super crazy expensive. I will never understand why a 2.5 kilo Dietrich roaster costs like $20,000 in the States, and we have to pay 100% tax, so that's $40,000. Yeah. That's like two Priuses.
It's a lot.
I don't understand that, because it's just a piece of metal, man. It doesn't have any technology. You have a little bit of technology that hasn't evolved in 25 years. You have a little bit of software, but who cares about software? You can just cup and roast and cup. And so you just need the machine, really. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand why they're so expensive. Why Anikawa, a sample roaster, costs like $3,000-$4,000 when it's a fucking popcorn machine? Sorry, guys. But it's a reality. It's a reality. Building that machine doesn't cost more than $100.
It is literally, man. Literally, like, if you're listening and you don't know what the Ikawa is, like, just look it up. It's literally, like, it literally just throws. It looks like a popcorn maker whenever it works. It is, brother.
It is just the software and the algorithms. They want to make it more expensive, but it shouldn't be like that. Because if you had those machines at a lot less cost, a lot more people could roast their own coffee or have more neighborhood coffees or more people roasting their coffee at origin. But they just make it impossible, man. So the industry doesn't want us to do it. So when I got my roaster machine here, I was like the first in South America to have a roaster in its own farm. And that shouldn't be like that. It should be part of the tool for understanding. You know, it's like knowledge. You cannot burn the books and expect people to learn and be intelligent. Mm-hmm. You need to give them the right tools for everybody to have more understanding and doing a better job. So it's just about that, making it more democratic. That's something else I wish for.
Absolutely, man.
I think one thing we try to preach is just accessibility for all. And I know with the company that I work with, we strive to create experiences that aren't intimidating. They're not incredibly expensive. They're very welcoming. And you know, at the end of the day, like, your coffee can be, your lattes can be really, really good, but how the person feels when they walk in and out of your shop is really the big factor there. Because if they don't feel good, they're not coming back. So, that's just really great to hear you talk about accessibility and things that we can do better just to make because we very much believe in coffee for everybody. We were actually just talking with some people last night about how coffee's for everybody. You just got to find the thing that you like, and as long as you put a little bit of intentionality behind it, you're gonna have a great cup.
Exactly. That, and you're totally right about it. You know, people sometimes complain, how can I pay $15 for a pour over? It's just water and coffee. But then when you go to a party or stuff, you pay $20 for a cocktail, or you pay $10 for a fucking beer that normally costs like $1.50 in the supermarket. And then you don't care because it's alcohol. But then we're talking about coffee and people are like, oh, $15, that's a lot of money. But no, man, because there's so much work put in from the producer, the roaster, the barista, the coffee shop, and all to make that coffee perfect and vibrant for you, that $15 is actually a very good price, man. Very good price.
Right. And it goes along with what you were saying about the chain having to be so strong. There's so many things that have to be put perfectly in place to get this cup to you and to make it really good, you as the consumer. And to make a really good quality cup. There's so many people that are doing this purely out of passion. We see
I completely agree with you. Baristas are not well paid, man. I thought baristas in the world were well paid. They were like figures in the coffee industry, and that's not true, because my daughter works as a barista up in San Diego, and my son also had a little bit of stuff like that. And the baristas are paid a lot less than just waiters, man. They're just there for fun and love, for passion. Yes. And that's not good either, man. Baristas should be a lot better paid. I think so, man.
Mm-hmm. Kind of speaking off of all of that, I wanted to kind of mention, like, I know you've talked about wanting people to understand what actually is behind kind of growing coffee and the whole process of growing coffee, building a terroir, you know, the 15-year to like 20-year process of making your coffee good and the labor of love towards that. And I think that's something that's really important. And in me being a an agribusiness major here, all of my kind of like I'm a senior this year in school, and so you kind of get to make your own projects. And so I
Cool.
always try to present towards something in coffee. And so I'll like be in front of all these students in Southeast Missouri talking about coffee and the struggles of a farmer, and like people don't even understand that coffee comes from a cherry. And
Just basic
like
information.
it's just like needing to spread more information on the processes of doing that. And that's why paying over $30 for a bag of coffee isn't the end of the world. Like the misconception of if you don't buy commodity coffee, you're bougie. You know what I'm saying? Like not
Or a snob,
or a
like,
snob,
yeah,
not being
the
called a snob for, supporting something that's sustainable and beautiful and that you understand. You know what I'm saying? That's not commodity
yeah, no, I mean, we're looking at something that we're there's a giant mission here to try to get as much money back to the farmers as possible
Oh,
because
yes.
it's so labor intensive, to the point where we don't even understand. Like, we really can't sit here and say we even understand to the full extent. That's why we're talking to you. That's why we wanted you here, to talk about this on this episode. And I guess also, I'm trying to find out. So with, where am I at?
I don't
I'm
know.
lost. I'm lost.
You're,
Okay.
you told me you're an agriculture master, right? Did you read this
Yep.
book, The Unsettling of America? That's a book you should read, man. I'm going to try and find it.
I'm
It
looking it
talks
up right
about
now.
what was agriculture like in the 70s, and how people were like badly treated in America when they would plant coffee, not coffee, where they would plant their stuff, and it just didn't pay off, and they had to sell their land to corporations, and now
Yep.
everything is owned by big corporations. Man,
Yes.
those things happened from a long time ago. We
Yeah.
are not respected as people. We are growers. Are not respected. We
Yeah.
we're people think that we are just like in the bottom of the chain, and that shouldn't be like that. We should respect. We should be respected as the base of the chain. I cannot find the book, but you should try and get it. It's The Unsettling of America.
I just looked it
Oh, there
up
we go.
right now.
There he goes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. All right. Cool.
I'll make sure to read it,
This
Pepe.
guy. This guy is a revolutionary, and he's from the 70s, man. And he talks about how the land should be a lot more cared for, and not just for coffee growers, for anything. How can a bag of corn, 100 pounds of corn, cost $10, and a fucking cell phone can cost $1,000? Those things don't make sense. Look who took my spot. That was my spot.
Hey,
Hey, Muya, that's my
Moya.
spot, man. That's where I was sitting. Hey,
Then she don't care.
when I have to change seats, man.
Right.
So yeah,
So
man, this book is absolutely amazing, and it makes you understand how land is not valued. It's
yeah.
just dirt cheap. And it shouldn't be like that, man. It should be the real heroes should not be basketball players, man. Real heroes should be like farm workers that bust their ass to make something that people can eat and survive from, man.
And that's just
That's
work
something
off,
that should be such.
yeah, just work off passion, I think,
Yeah,
as well.
it's literally just passion projects. These are people that could just up and quit right now. And food production, the basic necessity of food, water, everything, like all that could come to a halt because they're underpaid
Absolutely.
and underappreciated, and it's all passion. And I really hope people listening to this really understand that, yes, in coffee, it's a huge passion project, but this is more than just coffee that we're talking about.
Yeah, man, it's worldwide responsibility. It's the land, the soils are depleted of nutrients. They're depleted of matter. You want to plant something and it doesn't grow, so you need to add like ammonia, and you need to add crazy stuff, and in 3 4 years that soil would not produce anything. And that's one of the biggest challenges that we have as a society right now, that we are burning down our atmosphere, we're burning down our soils, and the future looks pretty gray if we don't do something as people, as consumers.
Yeah, I think I was gonna ask you about, just starting off as a farmer. I know you've said that you've planted most of the things on your land, and building your soil biodiversity and kind of around that process of tending to your terroir, and building that. Were you always kind of interested in farming or in agriculture, and just wanted to grow like your own kind of, I guess, like garden in a way? Or what was the
Yeah, that's Voltaire. Yes. That's a concept that's always been interesting to me. It's a French philosopher, I think, from the 17th century, Voltaire, that wrote that the most happiness in life comes when you grow your own garden.
Uh-huh.
You know, uh-huh. and that was something that I wanted to try. You know, and we try to be a self-sustained farm. We grow not only coffee, we grow some food as well.
Mm-hmm.
But we most grow, you know what it is? We grow oxygen.
Yeah.
We grow oxygen. Yeah. We have like 25,000 trees that we planted, plus the coffee trees. So I think we're like a oxygen factory. Sometimes I think we humans have a due, you know, to the planet. We owe to the planet for all that humanity does. And I think that here I'm not just producing coffee. I'm just also producing oxygen and nitrogen fixing and carbon dioxide fixing through the leaves. So I think the mission is much more bigger than just coffee.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But I'm going to make another cup.
Oh, no worries at all. Not only oxygen, but also good vibes. I think a lot of people, even just being around nature is a natural antidepressant. Like just being around plants and being around all of that, it just boosts your mood. You know, that's why Costa Rica is such a happy country. It's beautiful. It's so many people look after the nature there, and it is something that's held very high. And so, yeah,
I think agree.
That's something that's really, really awesome in having all of those trees and just kind of your own little microclimate in the farm.
Yeah. So, and then kind of just hopping off of coffee for just a second here and kind of going on like boosting your mood and everything. Like, talk to us a little bit about, so you studied psychology, right?
Yeah, I'm a psychology major. I started in South Carolina. I'm a Palmetto boy.
Yeah, there you go. So what were some kind of highlights of your time at university?
I was a first international student back in the 90s. I remember when I arrived to college, people asked me if we had electricity and cars in Ecuador. So it was pretty funny. People were not so much aware about what the world was, but yeah, I had a very good time. I got into music. I'm a big fan of the 70s rock and roll. So I got into music and into playing music and maybe drinking a few beers here and there, dropping some acid when possible. But that was it. That's it. That was my best experience in the States, I guess. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool.
And I had a lot of fun in the forest. So South Carolina has a lot of swamps and forests. And I had a very, very good time down there paddling.
Yeah.
Nice.
No, it is beautiful over there. I like South Carolina a lot because you can go to the beach and then 3 hours away you can go to the Smoky Mountains.
Yeah,
it's awesome. Smoky Mountains, right? Yeah. I had a lot of good times there, man.
Uh huh. I wanted to ask about. I know with but I've looked at a couple of live videos that you have. You'll record doing depulping and different things like that. You talk about the aroma and the smell. When messing around with the processing of coffee, is there things that you look for, in processing to know how the end result is going to be, or is it kind of guesswork till it's roasted and you can taste the coffee, or how is that kind of dialing in a processing method or getting all that you want out of a processing method? What kind of does that look like?
Yeah, that's another very, very good question. And it's so hard to answer, you know. As producers, we try to make our best for our coffees to have beautiful, shiny aromas and flavors and aftertaste and sweetness. But we don't really know what we're doing, because it's not us doing the job. It's the nature, you know, the yeast, the time, the temperatures, the day, the weather. It rained, it didn't rain. Those little things affect so much the output. Mm-hmm. So that we can only wish for it to be good. And in that sense, I have this great belief in synergy and this great belief. You might think I'm crazy, but I think that coffee listens to us. Mm-hmm. When we're processing coffee, when we're taking care of coffee, and you have this dream of this coffee to be like floral and juicy and that, sometimes you get so lucky and that happens.
Yeah.
And I do think it's because there is this energy flow, this vibrancy between the producer and the coffee cherry, and how you treat your people, how well you pay your workers, how well you keep the environment. All those things add up into making a beautiful coffee. Mm-hmm. And that's why I was talking to you guys about coffee's importance is elegance. It's not intensity. Because nowadays you have these crazy people in so many other countries trying to add flavors to the coffee or essential oils or co-ferments or bananas and strawberries to make the coffee taste like that. And I do think that's not really where the industry should be aiming. I understand it happening because you can make cheaper coffee and with more intensity in flavor, but it's not true coffee. It's not what's going to create a revolution or make people more aware. That's just flavoring coffee. And that's something that I totally don't like and don't do, but respect when it's done. But it's not my thing, man.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, something for us, I think trying a co-fermented coffee is cool because it's like, oh, like this coffee tastes like this. But for me, trying a natural or a really good washed or an interesting like honey processed coffee, or you know, even for example like your processing methods, like trying something that isn't taking anything out that's outside of the coffee is beautiful, because you get this advanced complexity and different things you didn't even know you could experience naturally. I think it's, you can also, yeah, it's just,
yeah, I mean,
beautiful.
I mean, with just tasting your coffee here, it's like, it's far more impressive.
Yeah.
I think to have something just that's absolutely purely natural within the coffee. You're not putting watermelons or lime zest or coconut into a vat and letting it sit with that coffee, which is cool. It's really cool to experiment. You know, we've seen it grow in popularity here in the States, different roasters playing around with that. And I really think a lot of it is also from the roaster side of things, just being interested in roasting something like that. Like I get it. But at the end of the day, like, just like you said, I mean, I also agree with you and say that it's not the direction we should be striving for, because at the end of the day, it's another way of flavoring coffee. And that's something that we can't go, hey, don't put vanilla oils on Folgers,
exactly,
and then say, oh, but we can put watermelons in a vat. Like, again, it's cool, it's been really cool to see, but like I said, it's way more impressive when it's just something so natural in the coffee. And it's like, why take that away from the coffee, you know? Like, something that,
you know, a perfect test to let you know, to realize that would be to have only infused coffee for a week. You would quit drinking coffee, man. You'd be like, fuck, this tastes waxy. This tastes like watermelon. I'm tired of it. I just want a regular cup of coffee.
Well, yeah.
That's where it is.
Yeah, and I think we've experienced that a lot with every time we have some sort of co-ferment, whether it's on a cupping table or we just have it like buy a bag from somewhere. I rarely finish the bag. Like, I can't do it anymore.
Yeah, I don't even buy them.
Or
I
on the cupping
his.
Table, I'm like two scoops in and I'm like, oh, my palate is overwhelmed right now, because there's just, it's so intense, and it's that intensity that you were talking about. And then also going just new direction again, I'm just changing directions here, but
let's do it.
So we really want you to know that we're super thankful that you're doing this. We also view you as a really big figure in the industry.
You're a celebrity, man.
You are a celebrity, like, believe it. I know you probably
that is
don't
so
think
funny
because
I'm so small.
So we just want to know, like, have you, with these recent successes and this almost, for lack of a better term, like coffee fame, like within the coffee world, you're a really big name. And we just want to know if you've seen any recent, how this has impacted you at all.
If it even has,
if you even care. You could literally just tell me to shut up right now. So,
you know, during COVID times, things got really bad for everybody. You know, we're stuck at home and we could move and all that stuff. I was actually stuck here at the farm with my family, and a lot of bad stuff happened in the world, but a lot of also new opportunities came up. And one of them was the importance of social media as a tool. You know, it's not just about talking about where this girl used on this show or this or that. It's talking about serious stuff. And we were stuck at home, and I got the chance to start working a lot more in my social media. And I started becoming friends with people in Hong Kong, in China, in the United States, in Guatemala, producers. Started doing more forums talking about coffee and coffee taste and stuff like that. Coffee shops were closed, so people could not go to the coffee shop to have their daily fix. So they had to order the coffee and know how to brew. You know, what's water? What's grind size? What's brew extraction? What's ratio? So it created a lot more awareness in our society about how hard it is to source good coffee, how hard it is to brew good coffee, and how hard it is to enjoy it. So I think that was like something of a stepping, a milestone in my career, because I started making a lot of more social connections and a lot more vibrancy into the world and awareness about coffee. So out of those bad things that COVID brought, a lot of good things came up too. And that was one of them. That's where our career in coffee started making more sense, you know. Then I went to a coffee show in 2021 and people were serving my coffee, and I got introduced to some very nice folks working in the industry, some like important people, and they really liked what I did. And from that day to the next one, everything changed for us. So we became part of a broader community, of a beautiful community, which is the specialty coffee world community. And I would strongly advise to any producer or anybody that wants to do better in coffee, they have to go to the shows, you know, because in those shows, there's competition, which I'm not very fond of. I don't like too much the competition side of coffee. There are good things, but there are also some things that I do not respect. But what I like about the competition and the affairs is that everybody's on a level ground, you know, producer, barista, roaster, consumer, wannabe, whatever. We're all on the same level. We can talk in front of each other and talk about coffee, about processing, about countries, about origin. And that has created a beautiful vessel that's kind of leading the ways of the industry in coffee nowadays. And I think that's very important. The next one is coming in Chicago, which I'm going to be attending with my full family. It's going to be the first time we can do the trip all together.
That's
and
awesome.
I'm really looking forward, awesome. Man, sharing with people, talking to people, brewing coffee in the booths. That's so beautiful, man. That's what I like, absolutely. Man. Inspiring.
No, the community, I think, is something that's very special in coffee. And those shows, I think, is awesome because, you know, everyone there, like what we were talking about, is passion driven. And I think connecting everybody at those shows, I think, is awesome.
Yeah, I mean,
yes. Are you guys going?
We actually have not been able to get to any shows. We're very interested in them, and we want to. It's more so like we're in school. I you know, we both work here, and getting out there, getting time off work, getting away from school is pretty hard. But not to say that it won't happen. When is the one in Chicago?
It's you guys are lucky, you know, because normally they're in Taipei, Taiwan, right, Athens, fucking Milan, so it's far and expensive. But this time it's going to be in Chicago, the Windy City. I think it's the 12th to the 14th of April. I can hook you up with the tickets if you need them. They're like $300, but I can hook you up because I have friends there, and it'll be very nice to have more people around, man. Just try to make the leap. It's just a weekend, man.
We'll definitely look into it.
For sure. We this is something I think we can.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
I might have a meet that weekend.
Oh yeah. So Lewis does. He's on the track team here at SEMO, D1 athlete over here. I hype him up as much as I can. He's awesome. But
we need more people like you guys there, man. Just regular Joes, man, that love coffee and want to tell a story. That's what the industry is made of, man.
Yeah.
Dreamers.
Absolutely. Wow. Hey, we appreciate that.
Yeah, I really, that means a lot.
Kind of finishing off here, what is kind of next for you, Pepe? What does the future look like? What's next for Finca Soledad? What are you kind of looking forward to or wanting to do these next couple of years or in the future?
Yeah, I'm turning old. I'm turning 50 in a couple of months, and I just bought another farm high up in the South Ecuador Andes, 2,222 meters.
Wow.
I'm planting coffee there to make just wash processed coffee.
Hey, congratulations.
That's huge.
Yeah, it's a lot of work, man. I have my family helping up a little more. My son, Jose, just turned 19. He's helping me quite a lot. Now that he sees a little bit of success, he's more interested in the coffee world. So that for me is a blessing. My daughter is also interested in maybe working a little more in the coffee. So I don't know. I'm not very good in seeing the future. I really live in the present. I'm very spontaneous combustion guy. So I really don't know what's up. But I'd like to have, I don't know, more fairness in the world, much better prices paid. You know, the industry talks about what's fair, you know, they talk about fair trade, talk about organic, they talk about Rainforest Alliance. And when you go to the supermarket, you can buy this fair trade coffee. That's fucking bullshit, man, with the same F, you know.
Yes.
The reality of coffee should be that instead of having double standards, we should have double digits. You know, coffee should not cost less than $10 a pound green, because that way producers could take their kids to school, could live in a decent house, could have a car. Those things for me are the future of the industry, because if we don't do that, man, we're going to stop doing coffee. If you look in the map of the world, where is coffee comes from? The poorest countries. And Africa is like the hub for that. And you see how the people live in Africa? That's not fair, man. And people still buy the coffee like that. So I think we need to make a major shift in what our values are.
Yeah.
And give more to those who have less.
Mm-hmm. And again, that comes with more education within the supply chain, like understanding like what all the price of your coffee goes to. It goes to not only the farmer, but the pickers and, you know, all of the different variables within the process of getting you the green coffee. So,
and that also comes with the responsibility as roasters to provide transparency. I think Onyx does a really good job with transparency that I've seen. I've really appreciated that. And I really think it's up to us here. Yeah. Look at that little sneak peek.
Yes. The T-Oxidator, man. T-Oxidator. I just got it. And it's one of the just got him. The code sent it to me, and it's one of the best expressions of Tipica that I've had, man. Oh, really lovely.
That dude, we're so happy for you. Like it's incredible to watch you grow and just see your success. But the at the end of the day, like it's there's a lot of responsibilities, a lot of different places in the industry that really need to be held accountable to educate people on what we should be doing and the right direction to go. And we can sit here and talk about it all we want. About which direction, but like you said, action really needs to be taken place. And there's just a new direction that we need to look forward to.
I think it's motivating, man. Like that's something I really want to do. Exciting. You know, I want to talk about it. I want to spread as much knowledge around as possible so people can understand how beautiful coffee really is. And you know, that's just something that's true.
And how beautiful life really is, man. Yeah, how beautiful life really is. I remember when I was a sophomore, a student in the States, you know, my friends in school were not so happy about life, man. They were thinking about mortgage and about insurance and about work and about debt. That's not life, man. Mm-hmm. That's not life.
And again, that comes also back to, you know, living in the present and not really worrying about the future and being present in what you're doing and being intentional again. So,
yeah, exactly. And so we very much strive to be an educational resource and using ourselves as a resource for others. And we just want to know, like, what's one piece of advice that you want to give to anyone who's just now getting into specialty coffee?
Oof. Live the moment, man. Carpe diem. That's it.
Carpe diem. Yeah.
That's it. Let's leave it there.
Alrighty, Pepe. We just wanted to thank you so much for doing this episode. And
yes.
And just, like, we very much look up to you and you know, not only with what you're doing, but also like the values and the vision and the ethical, like kind of stance you have and your take on life, I think is something that's super, super awesome. And something that, you know, is really motivating for not only us, you know, trying to get into the industry, but, you know, something to push forward and, you know, making coffee more sustainable and spreading good vibes and beautiful, beautiful coffee to share with people, I think. I just really wanted to thank you for doing this episode. And
yes, thank you so much.
Thank you for being you, Pepe.
Thank you for being Pepe. Yes, awesome.
Thank you for translating the message, guy. You know, we have the responsibility to make the world a better place, and we can do it. We can do it.
We can. Yeah.
All righty. Well, we'll end the episode off there. Do you have anything else that you want to say, Pepe?
Oh, it's so good, man. Keep drinking good coffee.
Yeah. Thank you guys for listening. Tune into the next episode of Sidecar Podcast. We'll see you then. And again, sit back, brew good coffee, and enjoy life.
Sick.